Okay, so today we have a few things to accomplish. We must continue to build upon and expand what we started last week. We did not really discuss, I didn't have enough time to finish discussing Parshas Para, but that's okay, we're going to do it today, and we're going to tie it into Parshas HaChodesh, which is this week. You know, in Adar, we always have four Parshas, Parshas Shkolim, a month before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Parshas Zohar before Purim, Parshas Para, and then Parshas HaChodesh. So last week was Para, and this week is Chodesh, and Para is related to the Chet HaEgel, which was a week or so ago, 2 weeks, and Chodesh is related, comes from Perek Yud Beis and Shemos, the first mitzvah prior to the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, that Parsha is always read, Parshas HaChodesh, on the beginning of Chodesh Hazeh Lechem, Nisan. So, let's first make sure we all have the building blocks in place. This is going to be a short review, okay, of the main points that we discussed last week. So we said, and we'll add a few little nuances here and there, a few little additional insights. So we said that there was an exodus. In the Haggadah, it looks like we kind of start the Haggadah twice. Okay, the story twice. After the Manishtana, we start with Avadim Hayinu Leparo B'Mitzrayim. We have 12 words that look like the beginning of a story that Hashem took us out, and had Hashem not taken us out, we and our children would be slaves. But then we don't continue the story. We go into a whole series of halachas about the mitzvah of telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is called the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. There are many halachas involved in that, and we spend some time on that. Then when we finish with that, we start again and we say, Mitchila ovdei kochavim hayu avaseinu. In the beginning, our ancestors worshipped the stars, the constellations, in other words, the forces of nature. But now, v'achshav kervanu hamakom lavodaso. But now Hashem has brought us close to His service. So then we actually start the whole story going back to Avraham and Lavan and the entire progression until Yetzias Mitzrayim. These two headings, Avadim hayinu leparo b'mitzrayim, and mitchila ovdei kochavim hayu avaseinu, in the beginning our ancestors worshipped the constellations, the mazalot, the stars, nature, they are really two versions of a similar experience. Historically, that we were nationally, as a nation, we were enslaved, and that is, we were avadim to paro in Mitzrayim. We were not just enslaved physically to human masters, we were enslaved by ignorance to the service of nature. Those are two parallels. We spoke about the exodus from Paro and Mitzrayim. We spoke about the idea that Paro refers to a concept and Mitzrayim refers to a concept. Mitzrayim is worse than Paro. If you think about it for a moment, there is being the situation of being a slave to an individual master. And there's a situation of being a slave to the state. Obviously, which one is worse? Think of Yosef with Potiphar. But think of the Jews in Germany, in North Korea, in any dictatorship, in Africa, in any dictatorship. State slavery is so much worse than being a slave to a master, because when you're a slave to a master, you can distinguish yourself. You can find favor. You can be elevated. But in the situation of state slavery, you are purposeless. You don't matter at all. The dictator, okay, the hierarchy, is not interested in you having any freedom of expression, of you developing yourself. That's a threat. Of you having any power, innovation, ideas. The slavery is so pervasive. In other words, the threat is so pervasive, and the fear, the utter fear that people live in is so pervasive because under a dictator, under a situation of state slavery, okay, the fact that nobody matters means that nobody above them has any compassion, no compunction about Tiananmen Square, Syria, and mowing people down who want to have an alternative way of life, who want to depose or take power away from the higher ups. There's total ruthlessness, and there's no way to overcome it, because everybody functions under the fear. Even the people closest to the dictator are terrified. Like Saddam Hussein would purge his army generals every 5 years, kill them all, because in case someone got popular, someone won a few wars, someone gained a little loyalty among the soldiers, that's a danger. So nobody, nobody, not even the dictator themselves, ever lives in security. Everybody lives in fear. And that fear creates the what we call in the hearts and the minds of people a defeatist, a fatalistic attitude. And out of fear, what happens is, and this is the references of Paro and Mitzrayim, right? This is a review, right? Out of fear comes a certain very limited consciousness, which is I need to survive with and avoid pain and avoid being murdered, and that's my agenda. Paro, we said, is bigmatria. What? We did this last week. Paro is bigmatria shana. Shana. Shana is how we refer to the solar year, is called a shana. And the reason it's called shana is because one of the meanings of the word shana is mishneh, repetition. Vishinan tem levanecha. You should repeat it to your children. Repetitive. In other words, the earth revolves on its axis. Takes 24 hours. It does that 365 times as it circles the sun, but comes back to the point where it started from. In other words, it is a repetitive cyclical process, and the reason we associate the sun and the solar year with repetition, Ein chadash tachas ha-shemesh. Whatever happened, we learned in Koheles, in Perikal, whatever happened will happen. Whatever was done will be done again. Nothing ever changes. The reason we think about the sun as repetition and cyclical, a cyclical cycle, cyclical time is a very basic concept when you study paganism, those ancient cultures, it's because the sun, from our vantage point, is always there. We always see it in the same place. It never changes. It's not associated with change. It's associated with permanency, repetition, cycle, and over again. Paro refers to the idea that a person's life, under this situation of being a slave to forces greater than oneself, becomes a repetitive cycle of survival, and that's it. Mitzrayim, we said, is divided up into two words. Mitzar Yam, the restriction, the narrowing, the limitation of what? Of the theoretical potential of a human being, which is always referred to as 7 times 7, plus the number after that, which is 50. 7, we said, is Teva. Hashem can be and is revealed through nature. Nature contains within it infinite potential. We are, today physicists believe they know 4%, and they know a lot today, 4% of what's really going on, okay? Nature declares, speaks of a God, and it speaks of Hashem, controller of all things, not just with a cause, but a purpose. And Avraham, who was a scientist, philosopher, observed everything, came to the conclusion that the world has a single God, cause, motive, you know, animator, and derived from his observations and his contemplation the purpose of all things, which is justice and kindness, which Hashem openly states in the Torah that he will tell Avram what's going on in Sodom, because Avram will educate his descendants in justice and kindness. So Avram derived the purpose also. However, Mitzrayim means that when a person is living under forces greater than themselves, that they have absolutely no ability to impact, to interfere with, such as state slavery, and all they care about is survival and avoidance of pain, and there is no point for even a lot of people to get together and try to present an alternative because nobody cares, and everybody is ruthless, and everybody's protecting their skin up to the very top, and the only way somebody survives is by loyalty and obedience. So a person is hopeless, as we said, fatalistic, and all of that human potential, the capacity to conceive of all that a human being can be, is limited to eating and drinking and surviving. Meitzar Yam. That's Paro Mitzrayim. We experience this physically. Hashem took us out of slavery. We also experience this intellectually and emotionally. That's Mitzchila Ovdei Kochavim Hayovaseinu, right? Two times the Haggadah begins. One is Avadim Hayinu. The Paro b'Mitzrayim, one time is Mitzchila Ovdei Kochavim Hayu Avoseinu. We were believers in the forces of nature, same as Paro and Mitzrayim, same process, same reactions. In other words, forces greater than us that we have no ability to control. Therefore, we live in fear. We are fatalists. We just try to survive. We do whatever we can do, desperate measures out of phobias and superstitions and ignorance and desperation and fear. So what do? We sacrifice children and virgins and all kinds of other horrible, terrible practices, such as the American Indians who would kill their victims and cut out their hearts and eat those hearts. Why? Why would they want to eat the hearts of their victims? They thought it would give them courage or whatever. There's endless examples of this. Superstition and fear, and it's cruel and it's ruthless and it's ignorant and it's all a lie. and nobody matters, and nobody cares, and nobody's in charge of taking care of another person. It's the same type of mentality, and it limits the human being in the same way to functioning from fear and from and allowing their imagination to explain to them what's going on, which is always a lie. And then their senses, which are connected to their imagination, right? Their senses, let's see how this works. How this works is fear of this ancient paganism, this fear of nature. Our senses perceive hunger, pain, a drought, a tsunami, an earthquake, right? We physically experienced it. Our senses perceived it. So our imagination kicked in to tell us what our senses are experiencing, and they told us there were forces of nature called gods, etc. We talked about the idea that there's a very important place for the senses and the imagination, and that has to be understood in terms of the process of the revelation of Hashem through the process through Yetzias Mitzrayim. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu did all the makos and the nisim and spoke to the people and demanded compliance and threatened to punish those who would be unjust, like Paro and the Mitzrayim, the ikrim, what essentially became the 13 ikrim, right, the 13 fundamentals, the things we must know were the things that Hashem demonstrated in Mitzrayim, right? We mentioned this. And Rambam says, whoever doesn't know the 13 ikrim has no chelik in Olam Haba. And in the Mishnah, it tells us that the following people who have no chelik in the Olam Haba, and they're called either a kofer or an apikoris or a min, different types of heretics. And the Mishnah tells us that who is a kofer? Someone who doesn't believe in A, B, C, D, E. Who is an apikoris? Someone who doesn't believe in A, B, C. Who is a min? Someone who doesn't believe. In other words, depending on what you don't believe in, you have a different designation of what type of apikoris you are. But those things that if you don't believe in them, you're some type of an apikoris and have no chelik in Olam Haba, they are the ikrim. They're the 13 ikrim. That's what they are. So Rambam establishes you must know these things or you have no chelik in Olam Haba, and we have to talk about that for a second. We said that Olam Haba, we've spoken about it many times here, is when divested of our physical body, our consciousness exists beyond us. And whatever we bring to that next dimension of a life without a body, a life of the neshama, that has the capacity to expand and expand and expand and expand infinitely, right? Like the Big Bang, all that now exists in nature, everything that makes up the universe existed at one point in a what we call a point of infinite density, and from that point, everything that exists came. We have to come to the next world with a point of density, all our chokhmah, all our das, all our mitzvahs, all our efforts. That can expand and expand and expand. However, we have to come there with das. What if a person functions in this world in ignorance, believing in lies and superstition and nature and forces that don't exist? And that's how they arrange their behavior, and that's how they arrange their thinking, and that's how they respond to things, and that's their worldview. And there's no das. In other words, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to all that extent to demonstrate in Mitzrayim that there's one God whose Hayah was, is, and will be, who controls all of nature, that it's Echad, that it's not random forces, that you don't have to worry about forces that are greater than you, who don't care about you, who are ruthless and unpredictable and random, and try to find ways to outmaneuver them, okay? Superstitions. Because you don't have to believe in that. Believe in one Hashem who created all of nature, who's actually caring and watching you and can interfere directly in your life without anything in between. That's Avodah Zarah, right? That is the source of Avodah Zarah. And we say in Ashrei, Karov Hashem l'chol karov. Hashem is close to whoever calls to him. L'chol shikru b'emes, whoever just call in truth, honestly. In all of the other things that we're afraid of, we have no need to be afraid of. If a person doesn't know this, and they function under the ignorance and the superstition, then everything is a mistake in their life, and what do they come to the next world with? Nothing. No das that can expand, and therefore they have no chelik in Olam Haba. There's nothing to do there. Right? That's what Rambam says. You must know these things, because they are knowable, and they were tilat, and they were demonstrated. It's like a person who's taking a walk through a beautiful field of daisies without bothering to read the signs that say, caution, minefield. If knowledge is out there and it's knowable, it's not okay not to know it anymore. That's what Rambam is saying. Now, the Egel, we have to mention Parshas Parah. The Egel, Avodah Zarah. Okay, Avodah Zarah is the wrong explanation of how this world functions. Because our senses, as we said, experience drought and pain and heat and all of it, and hunger and thirst, and our imagination kicks in to explain those things. We talk about gods and nature and forces greater than ourselves. We become fatalists. Fear, superstition kicks in. Okay? That's Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is the wrong explanation for life and the reaction to that. Now, human beings have an enormous temptation to do this, and that's what we really have to begin to discuss. We have an enormous temptation to do this because it's much easier to relate to the world based on what our senses perceive, and we love to fantasize. We love to imagine. And it makes sense to us, and then we can react to it in a visceral, immediate, urgent kind of, practical way. So B'nai Yisrael said by the Egel, and they said when they complained to Moshe by Rafidim, and in both places Rashi explains that they were a rejection of Torah, and they said by the Egel, Eila Elohecha Yisrael, Asher He'elucha, I took you up from Eretz Mitzrayim, right? Remember we mentioned this? And then by Rafidim, when they rejected Torah also, they said, Lama heli sunu mi Mitzrayim, why did you take us up? But Hashem in the Torah says 50 times, Hotzeisi eschem, I took you out. What's this taking us up? What Klal Yisrael resisted, what every human being resists, is being elevated, being forced to function from a place of rational thinking, where you do not explain the world by what your senses experience, and you do not let imagination guide you, but you know the emes, which has been revealed and demonstrated, and you appeal to the emes and that alone, and you leave behind the lower forms of functioning, which is the superstitious, imaginative, helpless, fatalistic, I'm a pawn, I'm a victim, give me something to do to save myself. You leave that behind. That's very hard. That is the core of Avodah Zarah. That is the core of the Egel. Okay? It is an enormous temptation to do this. It is still very much alive and well in the from community, as we'll see in a second. The Parashas Parah, okay? Parashas Parah is the Tikkun on Chet HaEgel. It's a Tikkun on Misa, on the Tumas Meis. We said that all of this ignorance that comes from mistakes, that leads us to live this kind of life, is called Tumah. That's a definition of Tumah. 49 degrees of Tumah mean that all of what could be known and understood and by in this world that Hashem created, which is called 49, right? And then the 50 is the Madrega above it, the Yam, the endless, limitless, infinite sea is the metaphor to tell us what to do with all of this, how it could reveal a Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? The fact the person allows themselves to become a victim to all of this, that is, we said, is the levels of Tumah. And tahara, purity, is breaking out of this where we use our senses and our imagination correctly, which is the following. Once a person, as Rambam says, has thoroughly and completely absorbed and integrated and is connected to the truths that Hashem has revealed about how this world really runs and is active, what Rambam calls the active intellect, is governing the person. To the extent that a person can even begin to experience in the olden days prophecy, where once a person was totally in the grip of his active intellect, it was only his intellect told him what was going on, then they would, in a meditative state, begin to enter into higher and higher spheres of reality, of existence, and they would perceive things on an abstract, non-physical level, truths about the governing of this world, about what's really happening here, truths. And then their intellect would have to kick in. I mean, their imagination, the dimyon, koach ha-dimyon, imagination would then be harnessed. They would have to call upon their imagination to take those abstract ideas and convert them into metaphors and images that people could relate to, that could help them understand higher things. That's where dimyon comes in. That's where the senses come in. In other words, once a person is functioning from a place of the truth, the knowledge of truth, then a person's imagination comes to help them find chidushim, chodesh. But parshas chodesh, chidushim. My personality will lead me to have a chidush, which will help add another dimension to the concept of Hashem is echad, to the truth. My personality will let me add another dimension to the chesed, Okay, the chesed in a different type of chesed, a different way of expressing the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a different way of expressing the savlanus, the patience, or the forgiveness of Hashem, a different way of expressing any of the established truths, my personality, my ingenuity, my chidushim will now come to enhance that. Not explain to me what's how the world is run, but once I know how the world is run, truthfully, my chidushim will be an extra dimension and an extra facet to that. Also my senses. Once I know the truth, Hashem has given us senses, which we are allowed to indulge and gratify in the right proportion and the right time and the right place. And they give us a sense of great pleasure and help us appreciate Hashem. We say it every morning, Reishis Chochma Yiras Hashem. The beginning of Chochma, of any chidush, of any interpretation, of any contribution, is Yiras Hashem. If that's not the framework, we're in danger. Now, let's talk about Negel Vasser for a second. Negel Vasser is a mitzvah, not midoraisa, but it's something we all do. It's based on Kabbalah. It's not a superstition at all. We wash Negel Vasser in the morning, take a cup, we pour it on our right hand, always hold your hand like this so it gets everywhere, up to the wrist, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now, why do we do that? Because we're taking away Tumah. Where's Tumah? We just went to sleep. Correct. When a person sleeps, the active intellect is not functioning. It's dreamland. It's imagination land. When we wake up, we want to establish, we want to show symbolically, okay, that we are not functioning today. We are not building. Our hands represent what we create, what we build, what we make out of our day. Right? We are not making something out of our life. We are not building off imagination and dreams and sleep-like state of mind where our intellect is not functioning, which is a essence of tumah, a degree of tumah. It's associated with tumah. We remove that. And by removing that, we now begin to establish that we can function today based on chachma. Okay. Now, when we say that there's a tremendous temptation to kind of like sink into this non-elevated way of living, this non-rational way of living, okay? We have to talk about the fact that even in the frum world, and that's why it's so difficult, human beings would like to do this. It's a tremendous draw. This might be controversial, this might be not. We're going to talk about ayin haras, we're going to talk about the pouring lead, and then we're going to talk about my grandfather's explanation of ayin hara, because it's very important. There's an article, I'm sorry for Rebbe and Adel Miller, but we are now going to talk about the superstition of Avodah Zarah, of this process of pouring lead. Does everyone know what I'm talking about? Okay. In the Frum community, a woman from Yerushalayim, she's not the only one who's done this, okay? There is some type of thing that goes on, which is the following. I viewed it myself, and I did whatever. You'll hear the whole story. Basically, what happens is people, again, think about this. People have difficulties in their lives. They attribute it to an ayin hara. Okay? Somebody gave me an ayin hara. How am I going to get rid of my ayin hara? Well, she has a solution. She's not the only one. What is the solution? You come to see her, and you sit down on a chair, and she puts a towel over your head. Okay? Then she has two pots. Okay? This goes on in people's kitchens. One, she supposedly is boiling lead. Maybe it's lead. I don't know what, if it's a pure lead, if it's an alloy of lead, if it's a metal that looks like lead. She says it's lead. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Who knows what it is? We don't know. Okay. Let's say it is lead. I don't know the percentage of lead, if it's pure lead. Then she has another pot. I don't know what the pot is made out of. Okay. I don't know what the two different pots are made out of. I don't know what's in the environment. I don't know the moisture, the humidity. I don't know anything because this is a chemical reaction that's about to take place and it has a lot to do with the chemistry. And everybody knows studying chemistry that every variable makes a difference, right? So she boils water on the stove. How hot it gets. Is it hotter this time? Less hot that time? Who knows? Okay. What the pot is, the material in the pot, what type of stove it is, how it heats. Who knows? Okay. The water gets to a certain degree of heat. Then she takes the lead and she pours it into the hot water, and a chemical reaction ensues, which is different every time because the variables are different. And I saw this myself. The lead congeals instantly into forms, shapes. Some are lines-like, and some look like this irregular nugget-looking thing with a half of an egg-looking top, almost like a... Now, that she calls the eyes. And some people have 3, some people have 8, some people have 15. And she pulls out the eye in hers, and you're good to go. Yeah, okay. I think this one takes a donation or whatever, but of course, it's a business. Okay, now, let's talk about this. Number one, what is this? So I viewed this and I was very concerned because anyone who studies science knows that lead is toxic, right? So, and everybody knows that this is a chemical process, and obviously for each person it's going to be different because the variables are not controlled, right? And who the heck said that this is how you take away ayin haras? Like, what is that? And also, this comes from fear that somebody out there put an ayin hara on me and I'm helpless, take it away. Okay. All of this is sheker, all this is usser, all this is the not befitting intelligent people. I will tell you my grandfather's thing in a minute, but I got very afraid because we know from science that Hashem created that lead is toxic, right? So I called up a man who shall remain nameless, who's a Hasidish guy in Williamsburg who knows everything about everything. I said, tell me about this lead business. He goes, I can't believe you're calling because I got to tell you what I have in my pocket. There's a man in Williamsburg who does this. And he's got children who are developmentally disabled, and it's a long story, but I have in my pocket the lab report that he got today. They all have lead poisoning. Oh, he does this in his house all the time. He said they all have lead poisoning. Now, I called my friend who had this going on in her house. I said, could you please get her out of your house as soon as possible? Anyway, what is this? Let's talk about what ayin haras are from a rational point of view, because there is a concept of an ayin hara, no question about it. We find it in Rashi by Sarah and Yishmol. What is an ayin hara? So my grandfather of Shimon Schwab, who had no time, he detested these things, okay? He explained the following to me. He said, everybody knows that when we look at our lives, that we are all blessed with endless gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our health, our offspring, our beauty, our brains, our particular skill, our ability to learn, our ability to make an impact. We are at Tzelem Elokim. We're just given at Tzelem Elokim an enormous potential here. And everybody knows that the matnas chinam, the free gifts that we are that have been bestowed upon us, are not because we've earned them. Who could possibly earn every single breath we've taken, every thought we've thought, every experience? Most of the time we forget about Hashem, we violate the commandments, we forget to make brachas, we speak Lashon. We haven't earned every single day the endless, continuous bestowal of bracha. We would not bestow bracha on people like us if we gave bracha to somebody. We gave everything to somebody, and they abused it, and they smashed what we gave them. They trampled what we gave them, and then after we kept giving them, they said, "We don't even know who's giving us this. No one's giving us this. It's just here." And we wouldn't keep giving, but Hashem keeps giving. So everybody needs to have the humility, which is simple logic, that all the gifts I have are gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be used, as we always speak about, to further enhance and increase and expand the awareness of Hashem in this world through those gifts. That's basic humility, basic normal thinking. But then people forget this. So they look at their beauty or their wealth or their status or their children or whatever, and they really think that these things I have legitimately earned, and therefore because I've earned them and I deserve them and they're coming to me, and they're mine, I have a right to display them, to show them off. I don't have to be humble about them as if they're not mine. I can walk around proudly saying, look what I've accumulated here. Look what I've acquired. Look what I've got. And I do that. I openly flaunt my wealth or my brains or my beauty or whatever it is. Okay, I flaunt it because I'm proud of it. And I want everyone to notice it. Because when I want someone to notice it, I want them to know what I have. But it's such a silly thing. It's like a person borrowing a very famous piece of jewelry that everybody knows belongs to a particular person. That person has that piece of jewelry. And I borrow it. And I walk around and I say, see what my husband gave me or whatever. Everybody knows it's a lie. It's not mine. In other words, flaunting what isn't ours is an embarrassment. But many people feel that when a person gets into a situation without much thought, that they're going to flaunt, and they want other people to notice. So guess what happens? Other people do notice, and other people, maybe in the privacy of their internal thoughts, say, well, why do they deserve all these free gifts? I mean, everything's free gifts, so why do they have more free gifts than I have free gifts? Then Hashem says, really, you want everyone to notice? I'll take a look too. Let me take a look if you deserve all these free gifts I've given you. If these free gifts are being used to make someone else feel bad, because I, for whatever reason, didn't bestow upon them these kind of gifts? Because I want something else from them. They have a different lot. And your free gifts that I've lent you are being used to hurt another person for no good reason, and you want everyone to notice, I'll notice. You know, and Hashem says, you know what? Maybe I'll take it away. That's called an ayin hara. An ayin hara is completely in our control. It has nothing to do with being afraid that someone out there give me an ayin hara and take it away, do something, because I can't control it. It's not in my hands. It's totally in our hands. It has to do with humility. It has to do with recognizing that everything is a bracha from Hashem. Never, ever behaving in a way consciously and being careful to try to make other people feel that bitter, bitter pain of jealousy. So that everything we have, we try to use for a bracha, for good, for everyone else. Our good is other people's good. Our gifts are other people's gifts. It's totally in our hands. There is no concept of forces out there greater than me that have power to harm me that I'm helpless before. That is avodah zarah. That is superstition. It's not befitting the Jewish people. We're not allowed to do those things, and that's what this is. And I said to her, oh, can I just ask a question? So if you take away all my ayin haras right now, and I walk out the door, and as soon as I walk out the door, somebody gives me an ayin hara. So I should come right back and take that away? In other words, so every week I should do my nails and then get my ayin haras removed. And like, what if while you're taking away that person's ayin hara, I'm ayin haring them? In other words, the point is, it's not out of our control. It's another example of human beings believing that things are out of our control. There are forces greater than us. That we're helpless, fatalism. Give me something I can do right now that makes me feel like it's in my hands, like I can outmaneuver these forces. It's avodah zarah, okay? That's Mitzrayim. That's the reducing of human potential to govern themselves and relate directly to Hashem to nothing but fears and ignorance and phobias. Yeah. Okay, we'll talk about brachas. Now, it's not, we do have a concept. First of all, let's establish this. Ashrei, we say it every single day. Korev, Karov, Hashem, Lechol, Karov. Hashem is close to whoever, Korov, sorry. How do you pronounce it properly? Karov. Korov. Korov. Hashem is close to whoever calls to him, whoever calls in honesty to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let's establish one thing and one thing for sure. That every human being, as we say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, is in charge of everything. That Hashem listens to us if we daven properly. He really listens to us directly. That is the whole point of Judaism. That Hashem is involved in the individual person's affairs. And that we have an ability to impact Hashem. We say in Tehillim, Tinu Oz Elokim, we empower Hashem to give us the bracha that we want to receive if we reach out to Hashem and do what Hashem wants. So that's number one. However, there is also an idea that Tzadik goes there, V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. A Tzadik has asked Hashem for something, and Hashem listens. There's that kind of idea also, no question about it. This is why people will go to Tzadikim, in a time of tzaras, and ask a tzaddik to daven also on their behalf, to do something, you know, to intervene. However, does this mean that the person is helpless and only the tzaddik is their salvation? Of course not. The person can also directly daven to Hashem themselves. This is true. There is truth to tzaddik gozer v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim, that tzaddikim have an ability to daven for a person. And a tzaddik can ask Hashem for a bracha for a person. In other words, like a daven that the person should have a child or something. This is true. Human beings can relate to Hashem, and Hashem does respond to us. It's not the same as superstition. Superstition is hocus-pocus behaviors that seem to affect forces that are outside of us, the red bends, all of that. I'll tell you a tzaddik gozer v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim story. Anyone here know Peshi Schreiber?
Yes.
So she has a sister, Risha Kaufman, who used to live in Elizabeth, New Jersey, where I grew up. And Shmuel, her husband, sat on the couch in Elizabeth and told us this story. I remember it as a child. Basically, to make a long story short, Peshi Schreiber, who now lives in Detroit, was very sick. She was diagnosed with a brain tumor. She got worse and worse. And eventually, the doctor called in Shmuel and said, prepare for a funeral in the morning. She's deteriorated completely. So he went running to Lakewood. Maybe they were in Lakewood, I don't know. And he went to Ravon Cutler, who spent his entire life just trying to establish Torah in this country. He was the one who led the Shabbos, on Shabbos, a march to Washington. He traveled in the time of the Holocaust to do everything. He spared no effort. He was devoted totally to Klal Yisrael. He tried to reestablish Torah in this world, period, end of story. Total servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Shmuel said to Ravon Cutler, the doctor said, I should prepare for a funeral in the morning, that she's not going to make it. So Ravon Cutler said, who are the doctors that say she should die? I say she should live. Anyway, within a few days, she was out of the hospital. She was fine. She had more kids. She's living in Detroit, happily ever after. The point is, there's no question that Tzaddik goes over Kadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. And we understand this because Tzaddik has a relationship with Hashem. We're talking about practices that have nothing to do with Hashem. I don't care how many tefillos you mutter while you're doing the superstitious practice. It's irrelevant. It has nothing to do. This is what it is. Forces out there that I can't control, that are going to ruin me. Help. That's what it is. We don't believe in that.
Esther, yeah. Changing the name.
Changing your name is a real thing. You definitely change name. People add a name. Yes. Garbage. In the garbage. When my cousin, Chana from Denver, who's adorable, now is Chana Elbaz, a fantastic girl, lives in Eretz Yisrael, came home from seminary with the thingy, red thing on her hand. She went to see my grandfather, and I was there, and my grandfather said, yeah, Chana, he had that accent. Yeah, let me see what is on your hand. She goes, here, I got it at Kever Rachel. He goes, yeah. Takes out a scissor, sniffs it, drops it in the garbage. He says, I don't ever want to see you with anything like that again. Okay, he wrote about schoolers and things. He said the best schooler for your children having a good life and a good marriage, with the Tuesdays and this and that, he said, don't make a extravagant wedding to show off. And don't waste your money on these. Be basic, be a mensch, and teach good values. That's a better schoola than all the other stuff.
What about the kameyas that used to...
The kameyas, yes. Now, there's a whole Kabbalistic world out there. I just want to say one thing on this subject. When Kabbalah is a business, it's not real. Don't go there. You're wasting your money. Okay? That's that. Now, are there people that have great insight into other individuals? Of course. For sure there are. Are there people that can understand you and hopefully guide you? Yes. But I want to tell you something that Rabbi Feiner said about his meeting with Rabbi Palm. Because we think that we go to a Rebbe or a Mekubel and we ask them an Eitzah for our life and then they can tell us what to do. They don't know us. They don't know our situation. They certainly don't have 15 hours to sit and hear the whole story. So asking someone who is a total stranger to tell us what to do without knowing all the facts is not a logical thing to do. I hate to say it. You can ask for a tefillah and that kind of thing. But Rabbi Feiner said he was once found himself alone with Rabbi Palm for a few minutes. And he figured this is a good opportunity to ask him a question. Should he go to college? Should he not go to college? Yeshiva, what should he do? So he asked Rav Palm, I'm a bocher, I hear this, what do you think I should do? Rav Palm looked at him and said, I don't know you. I don't know your family. I can't help you. I don't know your situation. I don't know all the conditions, what's going on in your life. How can I answer this question about what you should do with your future? So the point here is that there are tzaddikim and tzidkanios, righteous people, no question. But don't forget that Shmuel Hanavi was sent to anoint the next Mashiach Hashem. And he saw the older brother of David. And he said, this is the Mashiach. He's everything. He's all the qualities. And Hashem said, no. Because he has ka'as deeply embedded in his soul, anger. He's not Muslim. He's not Shalem. Ka'as is gaiva. It's ego. It's my own imagination, right? So Hashem said there, the famous pasuk, Adam yira le'enayim, a person sees with their eyes, their senses, but Hashem sees the inside. So if a Navi, my grandfather points this out in the Sefer, cannot know your internal truth of who you are, your essence, and the only Navi who can, by the way, is Mashiach, will be able to distinguish the Yira Shamayim and the righteousness of each person, whatever that means. But a Navi can't know your essence. How is it possible that a stranger, who might be a very, very righteous, wonderful person, knows you? It's not shayach. So we go, it's better rather to have a human being who knows you and who's close to you and who's objective to to help you figure out the situation. That's not the same as asking for tefillah. It's asking for, tell me what to do. It's the same type of, I'm helpless. We are allowed to daven at kvarim, but we have to be very careful. You can't ask the mace. You cannot ask the mace to do anything, like, so to speak, hocus pocus on your behalf, or to. But a person, again, there's a rational aspect to this. When a person, when there's a mace, a dead person, okay, their legacy that lay left in this world, okay, which is love of Torah, commitment to mitzvahs, okay. If their legacy is inspiring you, the prayer at their to be better, and you come to be inspired by their memory, and you come to be inspired to greater degrees of Torah, then their neshama has an aliyah. They, in a sense, have accomplished even more now. Every time somebody's inspired by what they left in this world, they, in a sense, have an aliyah. They've done more. They are greater. They've made a bigger impact. And we ask a mace. We don't ask a mace to do anything. But we daven that in the zechus and the Torah and the Yerushalayim and what they gave over to us and how we are an extension of that, how we are cumulatively increasing upon that should be a zechus. By the way, when we say zocher chazbe avos, we may, that zechus avos, my grandfather explained this to me too, zechus avos is if we build upon the zechus of what our ancestors established, then it becomes a cumulative effect, not magical. Yeah. Often we do. I just 100%. There's a indwelling. Now I just want to mention this before we end. Para and Chodesh, and then I'll take your question. Parshas Para. It's a very strange thing. We said that it takes away Tumas Meis, and Tuma is all of this, and Tuma and Misa are related to each other because ignorance and living like this is death in this world. It's not living. It's not. There's no Chayilam Haba. Remember we said that. But the oxymoron, the strange counterintuitive aspect here is that Para is a hoax. It isn't rational, and it comes to tell us that if you live in an irrational world, you're dead and you're tummy. See, here's the key. Once HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed the truth of the Torah in Mitzrayim and through the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we know the real truths that govern this world, okay? Now, there are forces that are beyond us that exist. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us through the Chukim about them. And through the Chukim, Hashem, like Shatnez, says, just trust me, don't mix wool and linen. Because there are forces that are part of the governing of the world that the mitzvah is responding to those truths. Okay, so the fact that we are willing to be, so to speak, let go of our reasoning, we are willing to conduct ourselves in a way that we don't have a rational explanation for, even that has a place if it's under the framework of a greater truth. Since we know the Torah is true, and this mitzvah is in the Torah, I will behave in a way that I can't explain rationally, but I'm able to do that because it's in the Torah, and that's rational. That I experienced. So the concept of para tells us that a so-called chok, irrational behavior, okay, actually has a place, imagination has a place, behaving according even to something greater than us that we don't understand has a place, chidushim have a place, the senses have a place, all under the framework. Then comes Parshas HaChodesh, and I didn't think I would. We'll save this to the concept of Rosh Chodesh and the concept of Chodshei Hashanah, how we blend the lunar and the solar year. We always do it in Adar, and the significance of that. This is a magnificent essay. If anybody wants this, I'll email it to you. It's one of the Talmidim of Moshe Shapiro named Daniel Baron. Mrs. Baron sometimes comes here, but she's not here. Esther Nemo, yeah, it's fantastic. It's superb.
So
it's,
you send it on that if you sent it,
yes, I could send it to the whole list. Yeah. Everybody here on the email list, make sure you are. I can send it out. Esther in the Moon. Anyway, the main point I want to say here is we ultimately, in this month of Adar, when there's a second Adar, We do blend, we do unify the lunar year, the Chiddush concept, and the solar year, the cyclical repetitive concept. We bring them together, right? Because although we base our moedim on the month, our moedim must fall out in certain seasons, which is solar. So we do add those 11 days, 6 times in 19 years, to blend the solar and the lunar cycle. And what we have to talk about is that for a moment. It is true that Hashem created a world of Teva that is persistent and consistent and cyclical and the same. And through that, we learn that there is. It tells us, it declares that there is a creator. And it tells us of a Chochmah, and it tells us of the harmony of all things. And it tells us of the Echad. That's the framework. There's a truth. And then with the Chiddush added to it, with our unique our unique expression, our unique, what we bring to the table, the fact that we're always changing like the moon, we're always getting bigger and bigger and bigger, fuller and fuller and fuller, and then starting again and again, we're always in a process of growth. We're always in a process of being different than we were yesterday, learning more, understanding more, conducting ourselves on a more elevated level, which is rational, as opposed to, you know, different types of, you know, different types of modes of behavior, then we are meant ultimately to work together with these things, to put together the concept of chodesh, of newness, of our contribution, of our imagination, of what we perceive, how we feel, how it affects us, what we can contribute to the year. And the year has seasons, and Pesach almost always must fall out in the spring, the beginning of new life, the beginning, the new start, the fresh, you know, the opportunity to begin once again. And we then bind ourselves once more to the consistent, unchanging truth that Hashem has created. And that's why we speak not of cyclical time, not strictly of linear time, but we think about our yearly cycle as a spiral. It is cyclical and linear at the same time. In other words, every year we go around the circle. We have all the Yom Tovim, Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos. We do the whole thing. Every day we have a day in, you know, life cycle. But as we continue going around this circle, repeating the same, you know, coming to the same kind of points in the year, we are always, each year, hopefully, on another level up, higher, more understanding, more chachmah, more elevated, more, you know, refined, more closely following halacha, more careful to establish for ourselves a way of life which is based on the truth, rational thinking, which includes in it mitzvahs which we do understand and mitzvahs that we don't understand. They're both in there. They both have to be accepted and we attach to them. And then we're going up. So Mishram, this Pesach should be a month of Nisan, of Gilui Shechina, of Geula, all the things that we are waiting for. Okay, everybody. Class next week, yes. Bring your Haggadahs.